Recorded live.
Hello, this is William Fink in here for Eli James. He won't be in tonight, or he will be late. We're not sure which yet. And he was held up at a job site. This is Chris DeGenos, and it's Friday, April 9th, 2010. And we've been covering Isaiah, and we're up to the chapter 8. Just for a little refresher, Isaiah started writing during the wars, as we demonstrated in prior weeks in this segment, during the wars against Judah conducted by the Syrians and the northern tribes of Israel, which are recorded in 2 Kings chapters 13 through 15, and which took place probably between 760 and 750 BC. I'll be picking up at Isaiah 8:14 and adding my usual commentary and conjecture. This is a messianic prophecy, and we sort of seem to be in the middle of it. And he shall be for a sanctuary, and for a stone of stumbling, and for a rock of offense to both the houses of Israel, and for a gin, which is an ancient word for trap, and for a snare to the inhabitants of Jerusalem. It's odd that the inhabitants of Jerusalem are counted apart from the houses of Israel and Judah here, or at least it might seem odd. However, I'm sure that Yahweh foresaw that many of those inhabitants of Jerusalem at the time of Christ, which this is a prophecy of, would not be of the house of Israel or of the house of Judah. And as history and prophetic knowledge tell us, they indeed were of the house of Esau. Isaiah 8:15, and many among them shall stumble and fall and be broken and be snared and be taken. And we saw that with whoever was left in Jerusalem in 70 AD, because the Christians had the warnings of Christ and they fled. Bind up the testimony, seal the law among my disciples, and I will wait upon Yahweh that hides his face from the house of Jacob, and I will look for him. Behold, I and the children whom Yahweh has given me are for signs and wonders in Israel from Yahweh of hosts, who dwells in Mount Zion. This is also a messianic prophecy that many might miss the significance of. Quoted by Paul in Hebrews 2:13, let me repeat the words of the Apostle John in his Gospel at 1:11, as I translate them, but as many who received him, he gave to them the authority which the children of Yahweh are to attain to those believing in his name. Here, in Isaiah 8:18, the miracles performed by the apostles were the fulfillment of these things and were surely the signs and wonders, which Isaiah discusses here. Verse 19, and when they shall say unto you, seek unto them that have familiar spirits, and unto wizards that peep. Now that's an odd expression. That word peep can mean whisper, which is what snakes do. And that mutter, should not a people seek unto their God, for the living to the dead? Now that line is a little enigmatic. The Septuagint translates it, why do they seek to the dead concerning the living? And this also shows that the dead, or the so-called dead, that phrase describes only those who had departed from this world, or we wouldn't be able to seek after them at all. Verse 20, to the law and to the testimony, if they speak not concerning this word, it is because there is no light in them, and they shall pass through it, heartily be fed and hungry. And it shall come to pass that when they shall be hungry, they shall fret themselves and curse their king and their God and look upward. And they shall look unto the earth and behold trouble and darkness, dimness of anguish, and they shall be driven into darkness. Isaiah 9:1. Nevertheless, the dimness shall not be such as was in her vexation, when at first he lightly afflicted the land of Zebulun and the land of Naphtali, and afterward did more grievously afflict her by the way of the sea beyond Jordan, in Galilee of the nations. Let me say that this is a double entendre, Galilee of the nations. The phrase means the circuit or the region of the nations. The Sea of Kinnereth, as it's called in the Old Testament, but it's called the Sea of Galilee in the New Testament, is not beyond the Jordan. Rather, it is the source of the Jordan. Yet this word, and I've explained this in a paper on my site, Galilee of the Gentiles, with a question mark. Yet this word may also be taken to mean opposite the Jordan. And when did Yahweh afflict Galilee? Where it says, when at first he afflicted them lightly. There is not a whole lot about this in the Old Testament. However, first, let me explain that there's a connection in Joshua chapter 19 to Galilee and to the Tyrians. That is right. While Tyre was on the mainland, a city in Asher's territory, and the Septuagint makes that clearer than the Masoretic text, that it belonged to Asher. It also says in Joshua in the Septuagint that Zebulun was to inherit the walled cities of the Tyrians. And in the Septuagint, that's in Joshua chapter 19, verse 35. Zebulun, it says in Joshua chapter 19, was also to inherit Tyre itself, and also inherited a place called Kinnereth, for which note that the Sea of Galilee is called the Sea of Kinneroth, in the King James at Joshua 11:2 and 12:3, and that's truly the same place. So this is how Genesis 49:13 was fulfilled. Because on traditional Bible maps, if you have one that shows the territory of the 12 tribes in ancient Palestine, you'll see that Zebulun's territory does not border on any of the seas. But Genesis 49:13 says that Zebulun shall dwell at the haven of the sea, and he shall be for a haven of ships. And his border shall be unto Sidon. So Zebulun, indeed, according to the prophets and the Septuagint, inherited Tyre and the walled cities of the Tyrians that were actually appear to be in Asher's territory. Now we see that Solomon gave 20 cities of Galilee to Hiram of Tyre, as it is recorded at 1 Kings 9:11. And there's more to this story than meets the eye, since we have just established the connection between Kinneroth, also known as Galilee, the land of Zebulun, the Zebulunites, and Tyre. Hiram being the king of Tyre in Solomon's time. Hiram did not, and Tyre, you know, probably had a separate king because it was off the mainland, outside of the territory which God gave to Israel. It was an island, Tyre, built, according to Josephus, 240 years before the temple. Solomon gives Hiram these 20 cities, and Hiram doesn't like those cities, and basically said that they were Kabul, which literally means a boundary, but seems to more than likely intone that they were trash. And if we read 2 Chronicles 8:2, we learn that Hiram told Solomon to keep those cities. And therefore, Solomon rebuilt and repopulated them. So I would say that these cities in the land of Zebulun. In Solomon's time, Solomon tried to give them away. And when Hiram didn't want them, Solomon rebuilt and repopulated them. So they must have been made desolate in the first place when Solomon tried to give them away. And that's a little bit of history that's not really, why those cities were desolate. It isn't really recorded in the Bible, but it's evident that the people of Zebulun were not inhabiting the cities of Zebulun, 20 of them. I'm going to read the Dead Sea Scrolls translation of Isaiah 9:1 because I think it's interesting. For one who is in anguish, there will be no gloom. In the former time, he treated the land of Zebulun and the land of Naphtali, which bordered it, with contempt. But in the later time, he will make it glorious. By the way of the sea, beyond the Jordan, Galilee of the nations. And I could read that same exact Hebrew. By the way of the sea, opposite the Jordan, the Mediterranean, the region of the nations. The only way that Zebulun and Naphtali could be glorious after the Assyrian deportations, to which they were never to return to Palestine from, would be to receive their glory in Europe. And I'm sure that they did. And they're among us today as white Europeans and blind to their identity like the rest of Israel. Isaiah 9:2. The people that walked in darkness have seen a great light. They that dwell in the land of the shadow of death, upon them hath the light shined. The light is the light of the gospel. This is the way Matthew understood it, and he quoted this passage in Matthew 4:15. Verse 3, thou hast multiplied the nation. Now, I would say that the nation was multiplied, but it wasn't multiplied in Palestine. It seems to me that it was multiplied in the isles that Isaiah addresses from chapter 41 forward, and that is the so-called region of the nations. And the Galilee of the nations is a double entendre, a phrase with a double meaning. And Scripture proves that out. To continue verse 3, and to not increase the joy. Thou hast multiplied the nation and not increased the joy. They joy before thee according to the joy in harvest, and as men rejoice when they divide the spoil. For thou hast broken the yoke of his burden, and the staff of his shoulder, the rod of his oppressor, as in the day of Midian. For every battle of the warrior is confused with noise, and garments rolled in blood. But this shall be with burning and fuel of fire. Verse 6. For unto us a child is born. Unto us a son is given. And the government shall be upon his shoulder. And his name shall be called Wonderful Counselor. The Mighty God. The Everlasting Father. The Prince of Peace. Of his increase, of the increase of his government and peace, there shall be no end. Upon the throne of David and upon his kingdom, to order it and to establish it with judgment, with justice from henceforth, even forever. The zeal of Yahweh will perform this. Now this proves to me beyond all doubt that Yahshua Christ is indeed Yahweh in the flesh. Even if men do not understand as much. However, there are people who doubt this. And let me say that the words of the Septuagint are different. And I'm going to read the Septuagint at Isaiah 9:6. I'm sorry, I'm not on that page. I thought I was. Oh, I was on Joshua. Oh, well, I screwed that one up. I should have had a bookmark. Isaiah 9:6 in the Septuagint. Also, their love and their hatred and their envy have now perished. Oh, no, that's not Isaiah. I'm sorry. I'm doing terribly. I have to actually take off my glasses to read. I'm getting old. For unto us a child is born, and a son is given to us, whose government is upon his shoulder, and his name is called the Messenger of the Great Council. In the Alexandrian text, that says, Wonderful Counselor, Mighty One, Potentate, Prince of Peace. For I will bring peace upon the princes and health to him. However, you know, most of the time, almost all the time, I would say, where the Masoretic text and the Septuagint disagree, the Dead Sea Scrolls support the Septuagint. But that's not the case here. Here, the Dead Sea Scrolls say, For a child is born unto us, a son is given to us. The government will be upon his shoulders. He is called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father. Now this proves to me beyond doubt that Yahshua Christ is indeed Yahweh in the flesh. And here the Dead Sea Scrolls fully support the Masoretic text version of Isaiah 9:6. And even the modern Jewish translators of the scrolls have it like I just read it. So I would uphold the veracity of Isaiah 9:6 in the Septuagint. In the Masoretic text in the King James as being probably the most accurate version of the verse and believe that the Septuagint translators screwed it up, probably because they could not understand it in 300 BC or thereabouts. And usually the Septuagint supports, the Dead Sea Scrolls support the Septuagint, but not in this case. The Dead Sea Scrolls clearly support the Masoretic text. Okay, Isaiah 9:8. Yahweh sent a word into Jacob, and it has lighted upon Israel, and all the people shall know, even Ephraim and the inhabitants of Samaria, that say in the pride and stoutness of heart, the bricks have fallen down, but we will build with hewn stones. The sycamores are cut down, but we will change them into cedars. Therefore Yahweh shall set up the adversaries of Rezin, who was the king of Syria at the time, against him, meaning against Ephraim, and join his enemies together. This all clearly has a double meaning, I believe. Once for those who refuse to heed the word of Isaiah in his time, and again for those of us who refuse to hear the word of Yahweh through the gospel, which this alludes to. That this is all talking about the deportation, the coming deportations of the children of Israel from the land. And at the same time, it's talking about the coming redemption and kingdom of Christ, which isn't for many thousands of years after these deportations. Chapter 9, verse 12. The Syrians before and the Philistines behind, and they shall devour Israel with open mouth. Let me say that a good number of the Syrians and the Philistines and some of the other surrounding nations appear to be allies of the Assyrians who are going to come and deport the children of Israel. For all this, his anger is not turned away, but his hand is stretched out still. For the people turneth not unto him that smiteth them, neither do they seek Yahweh of hosts. Therefore Yahweh will cut off from Israel the head and tail, the branch and rush in one day. The ancient and honorable, he is the head, and the prophet that teaches lies, he is the tail. For the leaders of this people cause them to err, and they that are led of them are destroyed. And this verse, verse 16, it doesn't really chastise the true leaders of the people. And Brenton Septuagint rendering better reflects even the meaning of the Hebrew words here, because the King James really dropped the ball on this one. And it should probably read, as Brenton reads the Greek, "And they that pronounce the people blessed shall mislead them, and they mislead them that they may devour them." In other words, there are so-called self-appointed leaders of the people who pronounce the people blessed, the sycophants that tell the people what they like to hear and tell them how good everything is and how well they're doing. They're the people that are misleading us today. And nothing's changed. Same way it was 2,700 years ago. Verse 17. "Therefore Yahweh shall have no joy in their young men, neither shall he have mercy on the fatherless and widows. For every one is a hypocrite and an evildoer, and every mouth speaks folly." And this surely also is just as true today, and doesn't say much for any of us. That's why our reward is in our humility. To continue with Isaiah. "For all this, his anger is not turned away, but his hand is stretched out still. For wickedness burns as the fire. It shall devour the briars and the thorns, and shall kindle in the thickets of the forest. And they shall mount up like the lifting up of smoke." And metaphorically, I believe that's speaking of people. "Through the wrath of Yahweh of hosts is the land darkened, and the people shall be as a fuel of the fire. No man shall spare his brother." And that's what we have coming to us today in this coming judgment. Verse 20. "And he shall snatch," or cut, "on the right hand and be hungry, and he shall eat on the left hand, and they shall not be satisfied. They shall eat every man the flesh of his own arm, Manasseh Ephraim, and Ephraim Manasseh, and they together shall be against Judah." This doesn't mean that Judah is wicked beyond Ephraim and Manasseh, for it clearly says above that no man shall spare his brother. "For all this his anger is not turned away, but his hand is stretched out still." Isaiah 10:1. "Woe unto them that decree unrighteous decrees, and that write grievousness which they have prescribed." The writers that write grievousness. I'm sorry. "And that write grievousness which they have prescribed" would be better written, "the writers that write grievousness." Sounds like today's lawyers. Isaiah 10:2. "To turn aside the needy from judgment, and to take away the right from the poor of my people, that widows may be their prey, and that they may rob the fatherless." Yes, it does sound like today's lawyers. Let me read Matthew 23:14. Perfect conjunction with Isaiah 10:2. "Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for ye devour widows' houses, and for a pretense make long prayer. Therefore ye shall receive the greater damnation." Nothing changes. 700 years later, it was probably the same people when Christ spoke. Isaiah 10:3. "And what will ye do in the day of visitation, and in the desolation which shall come from far? To whom will ye flee for help? And where will you leave your glory? Without me they shall bow down under the prisoners, and they shall fall under the slain. For all this, his anger is not turned away, but his hand is stretched out still." And Isaiah seems to keep repeating that as the punishments on the children of Israel get harsher and harsher. Isaiah 10:5. Here Yahweh reveals how he's going to punish the children of Israel. "O Assyrian, rod of my anger, and there's the staff in their hand is my indignation. I will send him," meaning the Assyrian, "against a hypocritical nation," meaning Israel, "and against the people of my wrath will I give him a charge, to take the spoil and to take the prey, and to tread them down like the mire of the streets. Now the Assyrians were Adamites. But Yahweh still, and they were Shemites. They were fellow, they were cousins of the Israelites. And Yahweh still let them off to paganism. And all of the surrounding Adamic countries were let go to paganism. And Paul explains that in Acts chapter 17. And he explains why. But Israel was no better. And Yahweh uses those other nations, even though they were Adamic nations, against Israel. Well, today there are no more Adamic nations. So Yahweh uses the alien to punish us for our iniquity. And that's exactly what's going on now. Verse 7. Albeit he means not so, neither does his heart think so, but it is in his heart to destroy and cut off nations, not a few. For he says, are not my princes altogether kings? Is not Calno as Carchemish? Carchemish was the capital of the Hittites. Is not Hamath as Arpad? Arpad was a noted city in northern Syria near Carchemish. Is not Samaria as Damascus? Damascus was the capital of Syria, the city of Aram, and those people were also Shemites. Verse 10. As my hand has found the kingdoms of the idols, meaning those surrounding nations who would chase after paganism, and whose graven images did excel those of Samaria and of Jerusalem, shall I not, as I have done unto Samaria and her idols, so do to Jerusalem and her idols? So Yahweh's promising this indignation and this punishment against both the northern tribes and against Judah. Verse 12. Wherefore it shall come to pass, that when Yahweh has performed his whole work upon Mount Zion and on Jerusalem, I will punish the fruit of the stout heart of the king of Assyria and the glory of his high looks. So here Isaiah tells us that Yahweh will use the Assyrians to punish the children of Israel, but then, because the Assyrians dare do so in their pride, he will punish the Assyrians too. And that surely happened 140 years later. Verse 13. For he says, by the strength of my hand I have done it, and by my wisdom, for I am prudent. And I have removed the bounds of the people, and have robbed their treasures. And I have put down the inhabitants like a valiant man. So we see that Yahweh punishes the Assyrians for their pride, because the Assyrians were given by Yahweh the ability to punish the children of Israel. Verse 14, and my hand has found as a nest the riches of the people, and as one gathers eggs that are left, I have gathered all the earth. And there was none that moved the wing, or opened the mouth, or peeped, which could mean whispered. Verse 15, shall the axe boast itself against him that heweth therewith, or shall the saw magnify itself against him that shakes it? As if the rod should shake itself against those that lift it up, or as if the staff should lift itself up as if it were not wood. In other words, Israel or Assyria is only a tool in the hands of Yahweh, like an axe or a staff is to a man. Verse 16. Therefore shall Yahweh of hosts, send among his fat ones leanness, and under his glory he shall kindle a burning like the burning of a fire. And the light of Israel shall be for a fire, and his holy one for a flame. Yahweh is the light of Israel, and I believe he's referring to himself here. And it shall burn and devour his thorns and his briars in one day, and shall consume the glory of his forest, and of his fruitful field, both soul and body. And they shall be as when a standard bearer faints. Let me say that the standard bearer was an important symbol of morale to an ancient army. Even if the army was doing well or holding its own, if the standard bearer fell, the army would retreat or feel itself finished. It would destroy the morale of the men. Verse 19. And the rest of the trees of his forest shall be few, that a child may write them, or in other words, count them. And it shall come to pass in that day that the remnant of Israel, such as are escaped of the house of Jacob, shall no more again stay upon him that smote them, but shall stay upon Yahweh, the Holy One of Israel, in truth. The remnant shall return, and that may be read repent, and they're not to return to Palestine for sure, as we'll see in a second. The remnant shall return, even the remnant of Jacob, unto the mighty God. Not to Palestine. Verse 22. For though thy people Israel be as the sand of the sea, yet a remnant of them shall return to Yahweh. The consumption decreed shall overflow with righteousness. In other words, in the sense of righteous judgment. For the Lord Yahweh, or for Yahweh God, shall of hosts shall make a consumption, even determined in the midst of all the land. Therefore, thus says Yahweh God of hosts, O my people that dwell in Zion, be not afraid of the Assyrian. He shall smite thee with a rod, and shall lift up his staff against thee, after the manner of Egypt, referring to the slavery of the children of Israel by the Egyptians. For yet a very little while, and the indignation shall cease, and my anger in their destruction, which seems to intone the destruction of the Assyrians. So, Yahweh warns the children of Israel, you can't do anything about it. Don't be afraid of your punishment. Just pray that the indignation of Yahweh ceases. That's exactly what he's telling these people. And that's what I would think today. We can't worry about what this government does. We can't worry about what these Jews do, what this New World Order does. We just pray that it happens quickly and that the word of Yahweh prevails. Verse 27. And it shall come to pass in that day that his burden shall be taken away from off thy shoulder. Speaking to Israel and speaking about the burden of the Assyrians, and his yoke from off thy neck. And the yoke shall be destroyed because of the anointing. Israel shall be spared because Yahweh has anointed Israel. Not for because of anything Israel did. He has come to Ayath. He has passed to Migron. At Michmash, he has laid up his carriages. They have gone over the passage. They have taken up their lodging at Geba. Ramah is afraid. Gibeah of Saul is fled. Lift up thy voice, O daughter of Galim. Cause it to be heard unto Laish. O poor Anatoth, Madmanah is removed. The inhabitants of Gibeon gather themselves to flee. As yet shall he remain at Nob that day. He shall shake his hand against the mount of the daughter of Zion, the hill of Jerusalem. And that did happen. Behold, Yahweh, Yahweh of hosts, shall lop the bow with terror, and the high ones of stature shall be hewn down, and the haughty shall be humbled, and he shall cut down the thickets of the forest with iron, and Lebanon shall fall by a mighty sword, by a mighty one. Such is the action by the Assyrians against the children of Israel. And this began in, well, 745 B.C., I believe, the Assyrians first came into the land of Israel. By 676, it was pretty much over, and most of the Israelites were escaped. And by 612, the Scythians, in alliance with the Medes, destroyed the cities of the Assyrians. And we'll see that in subsequent chapters. Isaiah 11:1. And there shall come forth a rod out of the stem of Jesse, and a branch shall grow out of his roots. And the Spirit of Yahweh shall rest upon him, the Spirit of wisdom and understanding, the Spirit of counsel and might, the Spirit of knowledge, and of the fear of Yahweh. And this, too, is a messianic prophecy. And shall make him of quick understanding in the fear of Yahweh. And he shall not judge after the sight of his eyes, neither reprove after the hearing of his ears. But with righteousness shall he judge the poor, and reprove with equity the meek of the earth. And he shall smite the earth with the rod of his mouth, and with the breath of his lips shall he slay the wicked. And righteousness shall be the girdle of his loins, and faithfulness the girdle of his reins. The wolf shall also dwell with the lamb, and the leopard shall lie down with the kid, and the calf and the young lion and the fatling together, and the child shall lead them. And the cow and the bear shall feed. Their young ones shall lie down together, and the lion shall eat straw like the ox. And the suckling child shall play on the hole of the asp, and the weaned child shall put his hand on the cockatrice's den. I don't believe this means that the enemy will be converted, but only that the enemy will not be able to harm us. Verse 9. They shall not hurt nor destroy in all my holy mountain, which are the people of Yahweh. For the earth shall be full of the knowledge of Yahweh, as the waters cover the sea. And I believe that this happened during the conversion of the dispersed Israel to Christianity, during which we see the 1,000 years of Revelation chapter 20. Verse 10. And in that day there shall be root of Jesse, which shall stand for an ensign of the people. To it shall the nations seek, and his rest shall be glorious. And it shall come to pass in that day that Yahweh shall set his hand again the second time to recover the remnant of his people, which shall be left from Assyria and from Egypt and from Pathros and from Cush and from Elam and from Shinar, which is Babylonia, and from Hamath and from the islands of the sea. And this, I believe, is where Israel was dispersed to in Isaiah's time. The ensign is Christ. The regathering is centuries ago, when so many Israelite tribes squeezed from Asia into Europe. That's my opinion. Verse 12. And he shall set up an ensign for the nations, and shall assemble the outcasts of Israel, and gather together the dispersed of Judah from the four corners of the earth. Remember that the Assyrians took 46 fenced cities. They took all the inhabitants of Judah and Benjamin, except the inhabitants of Jerusalem, and the people who were able to escape into Jerusalem for protection. The Assyrians took everybody except the inhabitants of Jerusalem. And that's something that a lot of people in identity forget too quickly. Verse 12, and he shall set up an ensign for the nations. I'm sorry I read that. The envy also of Ephraim shall depart, and the adversaries of Judah shall be cut off. Ephraim shall not envy Judah, and Judah shall not vex Ephraim. But they shall fly on the shoulders of the Philistines towards the west. Let me say that the Septuagint, that says that they shall fly on the ships of the Philistines towards the west, which also makes sense. And they shall spoil them of the east together. They shall lay their hand upon Edom and Moab, and the children of Ammon shall obey them. And let me say that eventually this happened. And Yahweh shall utterly destroy the tongue of the Egyptian sea, and with his mighty wind shall he shake his hand over the river, and shall smite it in the seven streams, and make men go over dry shod. And there shall be a highway for the remnant of his people, which shall be left from Assyria, like as it was to Israel in the day that he came up out of the land of Egypt. So when the Jews say that the children of the dispersion the children of the captivity, disappeared in Assyria. That's not true. They didn't disappear there. They didn't languish there. They didn't die off there. They left there, just like Isaiah says they did. Isaiah 12, verse 1. And in that day thou shalt say, O Yahweh, I will praise thee. Though thou wast angry with me, thine anger is turned away, and thou comfortest me. Behold, God is thy salvation, is my salvation. I will trust and not be afraid. For God Yahweh is my strength and my song. He also is my salvation. Therefore, with joy shall ye draw water out of the wells of salvation. Christ used that same analogy in John chapter 4. And in that day shall ye say, praise Yahweh, call upon his name, declare his doings among the people, make mention that his name is exalted, singing unto Yahweh, for he has done excellent things. This is known in all the earth. Cry and shout, thou inhabitant of Zion, for great is the Holy One of Israel in the midst of thee. And I would say that this is probably not fulfilled yet, because most people do not understand the wonders that Yahweh has effected, because they simply don't know that we are the children of Israel. Isaiah 13:1. The burden of Babylon, which Isaiah the son of Amos did see. Lift ye up a banner upon the high mountain. Exalt the voice unto them. Shake the hand, that they may go into the gates of the nobles. I have commanded my sanctified ones. I have also called my mighty ones for mine anger, even them that rejoice in my highness. The noise of a multitude in the mountains, like as of a great people, a tumultuous noise of the kingdoms of nations gathered together. Yahweh of hosts musters the host of the battle. They come from a far country and from the end of the heaven. Even Yahweh and the weapons of his indignation to destroy the whole land. Howl ye, for the day of Yahweh is at hand. And it shall come as a destruction from the Almighty. Therefore shall all hands be faint, and every man's heart shall melt, and they shall be afraid. Pangs and sorrows shall take hold of them. They shall be in pain as a woman that travails. They shall be amazed at one another, or astounded at one another. Their faces shall be as flames. Behold, the day of Yahweh comes. Cruel both with wrath and fierce anger, to lay the land desolate, and he shall destroy the sinners thereof, out of it. For the stars of heaven and the constellations thereof shall not give their light, and the sun shall be darkened in his going forth, and the moon shall not cause her light to shine. Reminiscent of Jeremiah chapter 31. And I will punish the world for their evil, and the wicked for their iniquity. And I will cause the arrogancy of the proud to cease, and will lay low the haughtiness of the terrible. I will make a man more precious than fine gold, even a man than the golden wedge of Ophir. Ophir is the word that we get Africa from, which was a great source of gold in the ancient world. Verse 13, therefore I will shake the heavens, and the earth shall remove out of her place, in the wrath of Yahweh of hosts, and in the day of his fierce anger. And it shall be as the chased roe, and as the sheep that no man takes up. They shall every man turn to his own people, and flee everyone into his own land. Everyone that is found shall be thrust through. And everyone that is joined unto them shall fall by the sword. That seems to me like the strangers in Israel shall die. Their children shall also be dashed to pieces before their eyes. Their houses shall be spoiled and their wives ravished. Behold, I will stir up the Medes against them, which shall not regard silver. And as for gold, they shall not delight in it. Their bows shall also dash the young men to pieces. And they shall have no pity on the fruit of the womb. Their eyes shall not spare children. And Babylon, the glory of kingdoms, the beauty of the Chaldees' excellency, shall be as when God overthrew Sodom and Gomorrah. I'm sorry, this is the burden of Babylon. And it shall never be inhabited, neither shall it be dwelt in from generation to generation. Neither shall the Arabian pinch tent there, neither shall the shepherds make their fold there. But wild beasts of the desert shall lie there, and their houses shall be full of doleful creatures, and owls shall dwell there, and satyrs shall dance there. And let me say that word, satyrs. That word, satyrs, in the Septuagint, is a word that means tailless apes. And I would say that that's pretty accurate. And the wild beasts of the island shall cry in their desolate houses, and dragons in their pleasant palaces. And her time is near to come, and her days shall not be prolonged. Now, is this a prophecy of ancient Babylon? I believe it is in part. But the Medes took Babylon from the Chaldees under the king Cyrus, the king of the Persians, around 539, I believe, B.C. It may have been 550 B.C. But Babylon did not fall into decay for another 800 or 900 years. The Talmud was written there in the early centuries of the Christian era. It was still in use then. It eventually fell into disuse. And the harbor having silted up, the city was just no longer used. It was worthless. It no longer was an interface to the sea. It could no longer be a port. And they stopped using it. So I don't know if this more accurately describes the prophetic fall of the coming world economic system, which we call Mystery Babylon, from ancient Babylon, than it describes the fall of ancient Babylon. Isaiah 14, for Yahweh will have mercy on Jacob and will yet choose Israel and set them in their own land. And that's a matter of prophecy all the way back to Deuteronomy. I believe it's Deuteronomy 7:10. I'm sorry, it's not Deuteronomy. I'm silly. It's 1 Samuel. Samuel 7. I'll get it right sooner or later. 2 Samuel 7:10. Hundreds of years before Jeremiah. Moreover, I will appoint a place for my people Israel, and I will plant them, that they may dwell in a place of their own, and move no more. Neither shall the children of wickedness afflict them any more as before time. And that fully intones that the place appointed for the children of Israel cannot be in Palestine. So where Isaiah says that they will be set in their own land, that certainly can't mean Palestine. And the strangers shall be joined with them, and they shall cleave to the house of Jacob. And let me say that the strangers are not aliens. Rather, they are people of the Persians and people of the Medes and people of the Assyrians and the other Japhethite tribes that were in the places that the children of Israel were resettled by the Assyrians. And the Scythians took many slaves from among those people and brought them into Europe with them. So the strangers that shall be joined with Israel can only be other Adamic tribes. Because basically, it's only other Adamic tribes that are inhabiting the lands where the children of Israel were brought to by the Assyrians. That word stranger, there are five different words in Hebrew that mean stranger. There's ger, there's nakri, there's zur, and this is ger. And a ger, Strong's number 1616, is a guest friend, is more, is a much closer translation to the meaning of the word. Because a ger stranger is a stranger that has, is a person of another nation who expects certain rights and privileges and to be treated a given way in your land. That's what a ger is. It's not just an alien, as many translations would have it. 14:2, and the people shall take them and bring them to their place, and the house of Israel shall possess them in the land of Yahweh for servants and handmaids, for they shall take them captives, whose captives they were, and they shall rule over their oppressors. And let me say that Diodorus Siculus and Herodotus, and I'll give a general history from both, tell us of the Scythians, who were called Cumri, the house of Omri, the Israelites, the Saka, the Kimaroi of the Greeks, tells us that these people started out as the least of all nations, speaking from a Greek perspective, along the Araxes River in northern Media, which is the northern extreme of the Assyrian northern hinterlands at the time, let me put it that way. The cities of the Medes that the children of Israel were resettled in. The Scythians started out by the Araxes River. And Diodorus tells us, and Herodotus tells us, that the Scythians came to rule all of Asia by the time of the fall of the Assyrian Empire. It was the Scythians who had ruled Asia, as Herodotus tells us they ruled for 25 years, during the fall of Nineveh and the cities of the Assyrians. And the Scythians had taken large amounts of slaves and resettled tribes of the Medes and tribes of the Assyrians on the other side of the Caucasus Mountains, which is where the Scythians also ended up, from all the historical records. And taking the historical records and matching them up to Isaiah, the Scythians can only the Scythians can be the children of Israel. And Josephus, the historian, with his relating the children of Israel to the northern barbarians, to the Alans and to the Parthians, certainly corroborates this version of history. There's no doubt the Germanic tribes are the dispersed children of Israel. Verse 3. And it shall come to pass in that day that Yahweh shall give thee rest from thy sorrow and from thy fear, and from the hard bondage wherein thou is made to serve, that thou shalt take up this proverb against the king of Babylon and say, how has the oppressor ceased, the golden city ceased? Yahweh has broken the staff of the wicked and the scepter of the rulers. He who smote the people in wrath with a continual stroke, he that ruled the nations in anger, is persecuted, and none hinders. The whole earth is at rest and is quiet. They break forth into singing. Yeah, the fir trees rejoice at thee, and the cedars of Lebanon, saying, since thou art laid down, no feller, no tree feller, a cutter down of a hewer of trees, is come against us. Hell from beneath is moved for thee to meet thee at thy coming. It stirreth up the dead for thee, even all the chief ones of the earth. It has raised up from their thrones all the kings of the nations. All they shall speak and say unto thee, art thou also become weak as we? Art thou become like unto us? Thy pomp is brought down to the grave, and the noise of thy viols. The worm is spread under thee, and the worms cover thee. How art thou fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning? How art thou cut down to the ground, which did weaken the nations? Now let me say that Lucifer is not necessarily Satan. And this is, it's a complex issue. The ancient Egyptian kings considered themselves, the pharaohs, considered themselves to be the sun, equivalent to the sun. And the Babylonians and the Roman Caesars were had much the same arrogance. And that's, you know, we see in Revelation, the sun is darkened. Well, the seed of the emperor is destroyed. The word Lucifer means, it's actually a bastardized word. Lux is Latin for light, and fer is from the Greek word pheros, which is a bearer or a carrier. And in the Greek Septuagint, this word is eosphorus, which is Greek for light bearer. So we see Lucifer is kind of a Latin hybrid Greek word for light bearer. O light bearer, son of the morning. It's a poetic allusion to the belief by the ancient emperors that they were equivalent with the sun, that they were God on earth, which the pharaohs believed, which the Roman Caesars believed, which the kings of Babylon believed. So this is a taunt at the king of Babylon, because he's not really the light bearer. Yahweh is the light bearer, and our only light bearer, the God of heaven, and our creator. But ancient kings, they thought they were the light bearers. Today, in correlation, we have the Jews. And they are the sons of Satan. And they believe that they are the light bearers. They believe that they are the speakers of truth and the givers of laws and commandments to men. And like the ancient kings of Babylon, they will be thrown down because they are not the light bearers. Verse 13. For thou hast said in thine heart, I will ascend into heaven. Tell me this doesn't sound like the Jews of today. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. The stars of God are the people of God, the people of Yahweh. I will sit also upon the mount of the congregation in the sides of the north. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will be like the Most High. Tell me that doesn't sound like the Jews of today. And it also sounded like the ancient Babylonian kings and the kings of many other ancient empires. Yet thou shalt be brought down to hell, to the sides of the pit. They that see thee shall narrowly look upon thee and consider thee, saying, is this the man that made the earth to tremble, that did shake the kingdoms, that made the world as a wilderness, and destroyed the cities thereof, that opened not the house of his prisoners? The Roman historian Tacitus had a line about his own country, about the Roman Caesars. He said they created desolation and call it peace. So I guess that idea probably came from Isaiah, because basically that's what Isaiah is saying here. All the kings of the nations, even all of them, lie in glory, everyone in his own house. But thou art cast out of thy grave like an abominable branch. and as the raiment of those that are slain, thrust through with a sword, that go down to the stones of the pit, as a carcass trodden under feet. Thou shalt not be joined with them in burial, because thou hast destroyed thy land, and slain thy people. The seed of evildoers shall never be renowned. Prepare slaughter for his children, for the iniquity of their fathers, that they do not rise, nor possess the land, nor fill the face of the world with cities. For I will rise up against them, saith Yahweh of hosts, and cut off Babylon the name, and the remnant, and son and nephew, saith Yahweh. I will also make it a possession for the bitter and pools of water. And I will sweep with it the bosom of destruction, saith Yahweh of hosts. Yahweh of hosts has sworn, saying, surely as I have thought, so shall it come to pass, and as I have purposed, so shall it stand, that I will break the Assyrian in my land, and upon my mountains tread him underfoot. Then shall his yoke depart from off them, and his burden depart from off his shoulders. As I said, the children of Israel, the Scythians, concert with the Medes, and the Persians destroyed the Assyrians. I think the date was 608 BC. It may have been 612. My memory fails me. Verse 26. This is the purpose that is purposed upon the whole earth. And this is the hand that is stretched out upon all the nations. For Yahweh of hosts has purposed. And who shall disannul it? And his hand is stretched out. And who shall turn it back? In the year that King Ahaz died, was this burden. Rejoice not thou, O Palestina, because the rod of him that smote thee is broken. For out of the serpent's root shall come forth a cockatrice. And his fruit shall be a flying serpent. And the firstborn of the poor shall feed, and the needy shall lie down in safety. And I will kill thy root with famine, and he shall slay thy remnant. Howl, O gate, cry, O city, thou, whole Palestina, art dissolved. For there shall come from the north a smoke, and none shall be alone in his appointed times. What shall one then answer the messengers of the nation, that Yahweh has founded Zion, and the poor of his people shall trust in it? I'm going to look and see what that word Palestina is. And it's Pelesheth. And Pelesheth, in the Hebrew Old Testament, refers to the land of the Philistines. Isaiah 15:1. The burden of Moab, because in the night Ar of Moab is laid waste and brought to silence. Because in the night Kir of Moab is laid waste and brought to silence. He has gone up to Bijis and to Dibon, the high places, to weep. Moab shall howl over Nebo. Now Nebo refers to the book of Nezar. And, or it seems to, anyway, and that's where it's the first part of the book of Nezar's name, that word. And over Medeba, on all their heads shall be baldness, and every beard cut off. Maybe Nebo's also the name of the town. A Babylonian deity who presided over learning and letters. Okay, so the book of Nezar is named after Nebo. There we have it. In their streets they shall gird themselves with sackcloth. On the tops of their houses and in their streets, every one shall howl, weeping abundantly. And Heshbon shall cry, and Eleale, their voice shall be heard even unto Jahaz. Therefore the armed soldiers of Moab shall cry out. His life shall be grievous unto him. My heart shall cry out for Moab. His fugitives shall flee unto Zoar, a heifer of 3 years old. For by the mounting up of Blue Heath, with weeping shall they go it up. For in the way of Horonaim they shall raise up a cry of destruction. For the waters of Nimrim shall lay desolate. For the hay is withered away, the grass faileth, for there is no green thing. Therefore the abundance they have gotten, and that which they have laid up, shall they carry away to the brook of the willows. For the cry is gone round about the borders of Moab, the howling thereof under Eglaim, and the howling thereof under Beerlim. For the waters of Dammon shall be full of blood. For I will bring more upon Dammon, lions upon him that escapeth of Moab, and upon the remnant of the land. So there's no help for Moab. Isaiah 16:1. Send ye the lamb to the ruler of the land, from Selah to the wilderness, unto the mount of the daughter of Zion. For it shall be that as a wandering bird casts out of the nest, so the daughters of Moab shall be at the fords of Arnon. Take counsel. Arnon was the river running into the Dead Sea from the east that divided the land of Moab from the land of Moab that the Israelites took over, which became part of the land of Manasseh and Gad and Reuben. Verse 3. Take counsel, execute judgment, make thy shadow as the night in the midst of the noonday, hide the outcasts. Bewray not him that wandereth. Let mine outcasts dwell with thee, Moab. Be thou a covert to them from the face of the spoiler. In other words, some of the people who escaped the sword of the Assyrians would flee for refuge to Moab. But the extortioner is at an end. The spoiler ceaseth. The oppressors are consumed out of the land. And in mercy shall the throne be established. And he shall sit upon it in truth in the tabernacle of David, judging and seeking judgment, and hasting righteousness. We have heard of the pride of Moab. He is very proud, even of his haughtiness, and his pride and his wrath. But his lies shall not be so. Therefore shall Moab howl for Moab. Everyone shall howl, for the foundations of Kir Harseth shall ye mourn. Surely they are stricken. For the fields of Heshbon languish, and the vine of Sibmah. The lords of the heathen have broken down the principal plants thereof. They are come even unto Jazer. They have wandered through the wilderness. Her branches are stretched out. They are gone over the sea. Therefore I will bewail with the weeping of Jazer, the vine of Sibmah. I will water thee with my tears, O Heshbon, and Elilah, and for the shouting of thy summer fruits, and for thy harvest is fallen. And gladness is taken away, and joy out of the plentiful field. And in the vineyards there shall be no singing, neither shall there be shouting. The treaders shall tread out no wine in their presses. I have made their vintage shouting to cease. Wherefore my bowel shall sound like a harp for Moab, and mine inward parts for Kir Haresh. And it shall come to pass, when it is seen that Moab is weary on a high place, that he shall come to his sanctuary to pray, but he shall not prevail. This is the word that Yahweh has spoken concerning Moab since that time. But now Yahweh has spoken, saying, within 3 years, as the years of a hireling, and the glory of Moab shall be contemned, with all that great multitude, and the remnant shall be very small and feeble. And it can be told that a great number of Israelites actually did live in Moab. I can't establish it right now, but it is evident. And I'll stop reading Isaiah there. And I see Eli hasn't made it, but that's okay. I'm sure he'll be here with us next week. I want to clear up one thing, because I know some people in this forum, as I've gotten feedback, have had a problem with it. And I'm going to speak about Kenaz. There are a lot of people who, in their sophistry, can take a couple of names that are similar, or even the same, and insist that there's a connection there that in reality doesn't exist. And some people are claiming that Caleb, of Judges chapter 3 fame, or actually even from Joshua chapter 15, that Caleb was an Edomite because he had a father named Kenaz. And this is absolutely ridiculous. And some people are saying that Kenaz is a Kenazite because the name is the same. And that's just as bad. In reality, the word Kenaz means hunter. And it's fully evident in the Old Testament that there are several people named Kenaz. One of them is found in Genesis chapter 36. And he is one of the dukes of Edom. Kenaz is the son of Esau. However, that is not the Kenaz in the book of Joshua and Judges, who was born 5 or 6 generations later, who is clearly not of the Edomites, but is rather of the tribe of Judah. He's mentioned in 1 Chronicles 1:36. And he's mentioned apart from the Kenaz, who is an Edomite. I might have had that backwards. I'm sorry. The sons of Eliphaz, Teman and Omar, Zephi, Gatam, Kenaz, Timnah, and Amalek. Now they are the sons of Esau. That's 1 Chronicles 1:36. However, the Kenaz, who is related to Caleb, the father of Caleb, he is mentioned in 1 Chronicles 4:13 as being of the tribe of Judah. He was born at least 5 generations after the Kenaz, who's the son of Esau. There's no connection between the two. The name means hunter. You could name your child Hunter, and some Jew in Los Angeles can name his son Hunter, and that doesn't mean that they're related. So it's a ridiculous assumption to believe that it must be so. The Kenaz, who's an Edomite, and wherever he and his brothers are mentioned, it's an entirely different list and a different group of people than the Kenaz, who's the father of Caleb. And neither of these Kenazes are related to the Kenazites. When people mention things in Scripture, you really have to understand the context. Now, Kenaz is a son of Esau, who was born several generations after Abraham. Genesis chapter 15 basically gives a list of people, of tribes in the land of Canaan that are there before Esau is born. And the name of one of those tribes is the Kenazites. And that might be just a general word for hunters. But it seems that there is an eponymous Kenaz, or Kenizi, who lived long before the Kenaz born either to Esau or the Kenaz descended from Judah. So there was some consternation over this from some of the people who are in this forum now. And I would like to say that the people that take things from the wrong places in the scripture and try to prove that because this name, that this Kenaz is an Edomite and this other Kenaz is the father of Caleb, that somehow the Caleb is an Edomite, and for that reason we could all go race mixing because they did it in the Old Testament. Well, that's just a Jew trick, and people actually fall for it every time, and I can't believe it. Go get your concordance, look up the names, see where they're mentioned, and it only takes 10 minutes to prove those universalists, those race mixers, to be frauds. Thank you. And that's about all I have to say tonight. I'm going to click on Christaleos here and see who it is. This is Potluck. Hello, Christaleos. I'll bet you're Patricia.
Hello, Bill. How are you?
Hello, Patricia.
Just call in so I don't crash as often. Good show tonight. Good teaching. Thank you.
Thank you. I really wasn't prepared to cover so much of Isaiah. I was only prepared to cover the usual two or three chapters or four chapters.
But when Eli's not here to slow you down, you just race right through it. There you go.
I know. I couldn't believe I read it that fast. That's okay. That's okay because, the burden against Moab, there's not a whole lot to say about that anyway. I mean, Moab was not really somebody, a tribe that we wanted to take with us into Europe in the first place.
Good idea.
So, how you doing, Bruce?
Good, Bill. Good. That was the last. That was a good last point you had there, because there sure are a lot of a lot of us clowns running around that are mixing up words and yeah.
Well, yeah, right. Well, somebody pointed out that Caleb's father was named Kenaz, and then they went back and pointed out that Kenaz was the son of Esau, and both are true, but it's just not the same Kenaz. And they're five generations apart from each other and born in two different places, and their families are listed, and they have two different families. How could they be the same Kenaz? And they use these similarities in names or the situation where a name might be the same in two different places, and they abuse that, and they do so to push their race mixing or whatever agenda they may have, and it's evil. And our people shouldn't fall victim to it. A concordance only costs 12 or 14 bucks. And I know that might be out of the way, and I might be sounding a little harsh, but we can all manage to acquire a concordance and take 5 minutes to look these things up. And then we can't fall for these silly tricks.
Yes,
most
sir.
Of the time, anyway.
Yes, sir.
And that's all it takes.
Mm-hmm.
And if
mm-hmm.
you can't afford a concordance, well, this eSword is pretty good, and it's free. And you could do searches on names in very little time.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I'd rather say what I have to say and be in charge of everything. So, you know, it's a spirit of vanity when one attempts to insist on something that isn't so.
Well, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Somebody in the forum wants Papa Cat wants to know when you're when your next reading is, when your next program is.
Oh, probably for sure tomorrow, because I have to get a Wi-Fi connection. I did a couple of newsletters for Clifton, and I had a commie call in and then a Jew, and yeah, so I have to be in control of the panel, unfortunately.
Yes, you do have to be in control of the panel on TalkShoe, Bruce. It's very easy for usurpers, for aliens to come, the persecutors to come persecute us when we're not.
Yes, sir.
Hello, Dan.
Hey, Bill.
How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Great.
Got a question for you.
Sure.
In Judges, chapter 11, verses 1 and 2, it's talking one of the judges, Jephthah. Now, it says in verse 1, it says he was a Gileadite. And this Gilead, I guess he was a son of Manasseh, according to Numbers chapter 26, verse 29. But then it comes along in verse 2 of Judges, and it says that he is the son of a strange woman. I don't know. It seems like those two verses are kind of contradictory. If he's a stranger,
The Hebrew word means that he was the son of another woman. It doesn't mean that she was an alien. It's the common Hebrew word for another, meaning that all the sons of his father had the same mother. But that doesn't mean that she was a stranger. Yeah, you know. And,
right.
And actually, Jephthah was the son of a harlot, and that's what it says. Now that word harlot, that's the way the King James interpreted it. But I don't know if that's necessarily so. Let me see what the Greek says. All right, the Greek says he was the son of a harlot or a pornes. But let me just say that the Hebrew word is not the normal word for harlot. It's isha, and it could mean just another woman. But it seems to me that the King James translators took their interpretation of it from the Septuagint. Now, pornes in the Septuagint, as Clifton Emerheiser has shown in the Rahab story, and in the way that the word was used in ancient Greek writing and in more ancient Akkadian and inscriptions from other cultures, a pornes is the word that the Greek writers of the Septuagint used also to describe a woman who may have just been a merchant, a seller of something, because the Greek verb pornao, or I can't pronounce it, I could spell it, actually means to sell and trade. So it doesn't absolutely indicate to sell your body and trade, but that's where the word for harlot comes from.
Okay.
But the stranger, it doesn't say stranger. It says the son of another woman. That's what the Hebrew says. And I'm looking at it. It's Strong's number 312. And that's Aker, and that's none of the words that are used as stranger or alien anywhere else in the scripture.
Okay. All right. But I didn't think that would make a lot of sense
most of us. I mean, I'm a sinner myself. I got six kids with two different wives. I mean, and three of my kids could say, "Oh, that one's the son of another woman," and they would be right, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And that's obviously what's going on here.
Okay, good deal. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Okay, if there's no feedback or no other callers, I'm going to end this thing. I mean, it's about that time. I'll go 5 hours on a Monday night, but I don't know about a Friday. Okay, this is William Singh for Eli James, and this is Friday, April 9th. Eli will be here with me next Friday, tomorrow night, on Yahweh's Covenant People. I'll have Clifton Emerheiser talking about the beast of the field, the word Che, his latest papers related to that, and one or two other things. Praise Yahweh. Thank you, and good night.
Yeah. Bye.